Okay, well, let's talk about your wellness story. There's some things that I want to highlight that are in addition to the module 10. So along with your money story, I think your wellness story may have the greatest impact on the quality of your life. I think it might be interesting for me just to present the first part of a wellness teleseminar series I do, just to give you an idea of the context that I put it in. I want to emphasize that this is information from research in psychology, health care, quantum physics, strategic coaching to guide you to create a wellness story for yourself. That's the most important, that it be your story. Now, we're going to discuss application of wellness, but you'll see the principles are fundamental to all growth, change, and success. So first, a disclaimer, my mission, my hope, and my stretch goal. The disclaimer, I won't offer advice about vitamin supplements, how to exercise, or 1,700 calorie diets. My mission, much more fundamental, to change the way you think, specifically to be a catalyst for you to examine your wellness story, how you write it, and how you can write a new one. My hope, to guide you to look around the corner at the next years and decades of your life. What you do today can affect the quality and longevity of those tomorrows. My stretch goal, to have this make a positive and powerful difference for you for the rest of your life. What I believe is this, you don't need to be told again to exercise, to lose weight, to stop smoking, and if a better diet were the answer, the 273rd new one in the last 6 months would have been enough. I want to guide you to write your own wellness story. When you go to someplace new, rather than give you directions, I'll teach you to read a map. Teach you the essentials to write and live a new wellness story rather than what you should do or ghostwrite it for you. So it will be your story. And you've heard me mention this before. People are less likely to incorporate the stories of others into their own action agenda. When someone is motivated to see a doctor, motivated by pain, scared, goes to trouble, and the expense of seeing a doctor, slightly less than 50% actually fill the prescription that the doctor writes. Of those, slightly less than 50% comply with the exact directions. So less than 25% of people follow expert advice, even when they're highly motivated. And making a physical symptom go away does the same thing, just by a pain medication or disregarding. The symptom is a signal, a story in itself, a story needing and begging to be listened to and understood. Your body will simply find another way to bring you more information. When you listen to whispers, no one has to shout. Wellness is a mindset. This mindset gives ownership of a life story of wellness to each individual. And with this ownership comes the responsibility and privilege that each thought, feeling, experience, and behavior is created each moment. Warren Buffett used the analogy of having a car. If you buy a new car every few years, the approach would be really different than if you knew you were going to choose one car and have it for the rest of your life. You'd probably do research, know the best care for that car, change the oil more frequently, do everything possible for excellent maintenance. No one would be the only car for all of your life you take meticulous care of it. Your body is the only one you'll have for the rest of your life. Your body is irreplaceable. Everything about its care and maintenance matters. It reflects the cumulative care you take of it. Wellness integrates mind, body, and spirit with a balanced flow of energy. Notice the wellness system of energy in Module 10. It speaks to the impact of change in a different way. Wellness is an ongoing process of choices. It's never static. We never stay at the same place, so it must consistently be assessed. Wellness is not something that you began to plan at age 65 or even at age 50. Every choice you make each day writes your wellness story. So we're going to look at a process of change in an informed and systematic way. An illustration of those little choices. overall wellness is not based on some big monumental choice, but on little things. If you plan to run 30 minutes on a treadmill, but after 10 get off convinced that you're a little stiff today, it's one small choice, no big deal. Nobody has a heart attack because of 20 minutes less on the treadmill on one day. You resolve to cut empty calories, but then grab a few peanut M&Ms from the candy bowl. You're not really thinking much about the choice, because no single M&M, not even five, cause anyone to have diabetes. But think about it this way. You take in 100 calories more each day than you burn. And that's very, very small. In 1 year, you gain 9 pounds. And it goes in the opposite direction, too. Yet our wellness story is the cumulative result of daily choices that we don't rationalize away or justify into oblivion. So let's look at a new wellness story. We're in a revolution in the science of wellness and of aging. We understand how our bodies work now at the cellular level. We understand healthy aging. We can live healthier lives than anyone in all of biological time. Now, this has taken a while because health is biologically way more complex than disease. I want to summarize some extensive research on wellness and the aging process. First, about decay versus growth. The story that we engage with our bodies is one of two possibilities, decay or growth. Dr. Henry Lodge, in his book, Younger Next Year, this is something I would highly recommend for each of you, and I've recommended for many, if not most, of my clients. There's also a version called Younger Next Year for Women. I've met him, and we share the same venue, and I've been a huge fan since. We've read each other's work. I really respect him. He's devoted over 30 years of his professional life to wellness research. He's an internist in New York City. Lodge says that 70% of aging is not aging, but decay. If we assume that ailments and deterioration are a normal part of growing old, and that we diminish activity and deteriorate physically as well as in quality of life, the change on the cellular level will be decay. Inactivity and the absence of signals to grow result in body and brain decay. Now, another story is that both decay and functional aging are essentially optional. The alternate story is growth. We send signals to our body of daily exercise, emotional meaning, good nutrition, and zest for living. Here's a quote from Lodge in Younger Next Year. Steady exercise is a coded message to your body and your mind. In 20 years, failure to exercise 6 days a week will seem as self-destructive as smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. The new wellness story includes a central storyline of exercise. No negotiations, no excuses, serious exercise. According to Lodge, after age 50, 6 days a week for the rest of your life is mandatory. Lodge emphasizes that 4 of those 6 days need to be serious aerobic exercise. So, serious aerobic exercise, 4 days a week, the rest of your life. Biologically, your body only knows 2 things, growth or decay. Blood vessels go to every millimeter of your body and each bathe cells in repair or inflammation. Exercise heals wounded blood vessels, and it's wounded blood vessels that kill you. Mortality falls with exercise. Of 3,000 people surveyed, 3 activities stood out above all others as ones that prompted procrastination. And these are 3 things that everybody knows exactly what to do. It's not lack of information. More than anything else, people put off exercise, eating nutritiously, and saving for the future, especially for retirement. Short-term desires can trump long-term goals. Emotions rule. On the other hand, think about it this way. Think about the mindset that you have for work duties, projects, and assignments that you respond to routinely and promptly. So this suggests that a task such as exercise be treated with the same mindset as work. With work, you don't get up every day and debate about whether you will or won't go to work, try to find time to go to work, debate about whether you're going to take off a couple of days or just skip it. Work is there. You get up, you go to work, you don't debate it. You don't consider yourself virtuous if you do decide to go to work. In school, later in work, you show up. It's an organizing force, a deeply etched default mode. Whatever constitutes work, even full-time parenting, you go to work every day. Exercise can be the same mindset. Now, for this, for some, it can be like a new job. It's a full commitment. It's a serious commitment. It requires a plan, just like your business. According to Lodge, daily exercise, like work, should be right up there, trumped only by serious illness or family needs, the default steward. Now, as a coach, you're not a personal trainer. You're not a dietitian. You're not giving directives. But you can make informed recommendations. And then you can listen to how your client takes information and makes choices to write the next chapter. And you're always free to challenge the choices or the trail of logic leading to them and their fulfillment. Two things above all others create neurogenesis. Now, I think this is huge. Enriched environment and exercise. An enriched environment, intellectual and emotional stimulation, creates more complex brain structure, especially in the area, this has been measured, the hippocampus is the part of the brain that's especially connected with creativity and memory. And remember, we talked about it as really the seat of the unconscious, because this is where meaning is attached. But it's primarily in charge of creativity and memory. Mice from an enriched environment have an increase in the number of their hippocampal cells of 15%. Physical exercise increased the number of cells in the hippocampus by almost 100%. And very recently, these studies have been replicated in non-invasive ways in London taxicab drivers and University of Hamburg medical students. Increase in the number of cells in the hippocampus responsible for creativity and memory, almost 100%. Another finding, chronic stress impairs neurogenesis. The number of cells in the hippocampus go the other direction with chronic stress. And think about how that affects memory and creativity. The Power of Story has another chapter created by studies of athletes taking human growth hormone and those taking the placebo. The group receiving the placebo believed that they were getting human growth hormone and improved at four fitness tests that measured strength, endurance, power, sprint capacity. And here's the summary study. Studying the Annals of Internal Medicine, endocrinologists at Stanford reviewed 44 studies and concluded that although human growth hormone did increase lean body mass, it did not lead to improvements in performance. And they concluded that it's really the belief and the mind that improve performance. Medical research suggests that up to 70% of non-surgical successful treatments by all physicians are the result of the patient's belief that the treatment will work. And, of course, that has to begin by the physician's belief that the treatment will work. So here's some assorted, important, I think, wellness variables. One, empathy heals. Patients whose doctors show concern recover from colds faster. This is from research at University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. Patients of doctors who had empathic concern recovered more quickly than those whose physicians focused only on facts. There was a direct relationship between the physician's empathy level and the patient's level of IL-8, a chemical that summons the immune system to fight toxins. Faith and spirituality heals. The capacity for faith, the belief in something larger than ourselves, can be wired into the brain in the right hemisphere, We crave a sense of coherence and purpose. Stress and heart disease can both be allayed by spiritual practices. Those who pray regularly have a lower blood pressure than those who did not in a study at Duke University. John Hopkins researchers found that attending religious services cut people's risk of death of heart disease and cancer. Other researchers found that women to whom life meaning and purpose is central had a higher number of cells that attack viruses and a large number of cancer cells. And finally, at Dartmouth, a predictor of survival in heart attack patients was their belief in faith and prayer. Now, psychology has traditionally studied disease, disorder, disruption, but more than 60% of adults feel that spirituality, more meaning rather than more money, would add value to their lives. Spirituality is the basic desire to find meaning and purpose in life. And I know that we have some of you whose practices really orbit in the spiritual arena. I'm interested to hear your input on this as well. Organizations that have integrated spirituality into the workplace have found that it furthered their goals rather than distracted. My mentor coach, when I made my transition into coaching, took me to about three or four meetings each month, meeting each month for three or four months in the beginning of spirit systems. It's a group of people who want to infuse spirituality into business and into the workplace. Left and right brain, reason and spirit form a powerful combination. The merging of spirit and health is an integration of the whole person. And not until more recent times have we studied things like self-psychology, positive psychology, the psychology of flow, and other enhancing aspects of the psychology of success. I want to mention something about the framing effect and wellness. The framing effect has significant implications in choice architecture and decision making for wellness. A number of studies were done in which people were given three buckets of popcorn before entering a movie, and then the results were tallied based on the post-movie weight of the remaining popcorn. In other words, it was weighed to see how much each person ate. And each person was given a container so big they couldn't possibly finish it, but the results were stunning. People with the largest buckets ate 53% more popcorn than people with the medium-sized buckets. The results were essentially the same in a number of situations across the country. Same conclusion. People eat more when they're given bigger proportions or a bigger container. Now, additionally, the vast majority of people were not aware of eating more if they had a larger size bucket. They responded by saying things like, well, you know, I'm good at knowing when I'm full, and things like that don't treat me. They didn't believe the findings that were fed back to them, that they ate more when they had larger buckets. Now, that's inaccurate. Now, this study shows something very simple. People don't need more knowledge or a healthier attitude about eating. Awareness of health hazards of eating so much don't apply, since they deny eating more or less, depending on the size of the container. Since their attitudes, knowledge, and belief patterns don't seem to make a difference, the simple solution here is use smaller buckets. Think about the particular kind of unawareness combined with denial. Even when told that the studies were set up in this way, the participants didn't believe it because they believed they ate rationally. Now, the implications are pervasive. We eat based on an external point of reference, how much we're served. Or there have been another set of studies that show that we each eat more when we're with more people. We eat the least when we're alone, more when we're with one person, and it kind of goes up, and we eat up to 53% more when we're with a group of four or more. Someone else makes a decision about the quantity of food, and we go along with it. Does the restaurant decide how much you eat by the serving portions? When you serve yourself, do you decide on more because you're hungry before you eat, or just because you fill your plate is an automatic behavior pattern. The size of the container as well as the portion of the food both determine how much we eat rather than whether we're hungry or whether we make a judgment about what's in our best interest. So for anyone to change, they have to start acting differently. Now consider a related application. Do you settle for the retirement amount that your company decides to set aside? Or do you make your own determination and commitment based on what's left over at the end of the month? Or do you proactively decide based on what's in your best interest and your future self's best interest? A study by Robert Caulfield demonstrated that the right dose of expectation can reduce pain equivalent to a medically active dose of morphine. Expect pain to decrease, and it does. Expect pain to increase, and it does. Another example, when you travel, if you expect to be jet lagged, this will impact your experience. If instead you pay attention to where you are and expect to be awake and fully functioning, even when logically you shouldn't be, this can have significant impact on your biological clock and subsequent biological rhythms. The reference point is where you are rather than what time it is at home. The reference point is how you should feel in that new context rather than how you should feel based on the old or real time at home. So don't keep a clock as not my favorite grandmother, who I quoted to you before, but my other grandmother. Don't keep a clock as my grandmother did on the real time. Nobody could fool Grandma Kruger. None of this daylight saving time malarkey. She had one clock. She had her cuckoo clock. It was set on the real time, and she always knew what real time it was. Nobody could fool her. Now, let's look at visualization of your healthy body. Have the right picture of yourself in your head. Visualization of the destination for your body and body image is at least as important as your other successes. So here's some consideration for visualization goals. Be certain it's your body, not somebody else's. Have the right picture of yourself in your head in current time, not your younger self 25 years ago. Write down your ideal body weight range. Write down your plan for exercise, weight, nutrition. Write down your affirmations. Our states of mind have a significant impact on how much stress we experience. Let me give you some examples here, and I'll reference the studies. Stress contributes to 85% of all medical problems, Cooper Wellness Program. 70 to 80% of physician visits are stress-related. U.S. Public Health Survey and the UN International Labor Organization study. 52% of executives will die of diseases related to stress. Cooper Wellness. Stress is the number one reason behind sickness from work. G Publishing Survey. Stress undermines work productivity in 9 out of 10 companies. Industrial Society Survey. Now, here's something you'll see in working with your clients because it's human nature. You may see the pattern more quickly in a wellness story. A new pattern of behavior can occur for a sustained period of time. Then it can be subjugated to other, even opposing mindsets, and most often, say, a return to a comfort zone, a reversion to the familiar. So consider these patterns. And these are broader patterns, but you'll have an opportunity to see a complete pattern, which always is easier to deal with than long-term patterns that are harder. An investor makes carefully planned trades to minimize risk and maximize reward, makes money consistently. As gains accrue, the investor relaxes the criteria and departs from principles, making unplanned trades. Losses result, then the investor returns to the pattern of success. Or someone who's overweight plans a weight loss program and achieves an ideal body weight, 30 pounds lighter. As soon as this target is reached, the nutritional plan is relaxed and weight is gained back. Then the diet is reinstated. And remember the example I gave early on. 95% of people who lose significant weight on a diet gain it back, and 53% of those gain back more than they lost. The reason I believe is that they don't also download a revision of their essential model. They don't change their identity. And in this case, it would be the ideal body self. Their body self doesn't change, and their psychological self doesn't change. So this is where, in coaching, we want to help someone transform the model that they're using of themselves as well as their behavior. Or, the third example, the independent business person carves out a set number of hours each week to do marketing. This plan, meticulously adhered to, results in successful business. When it's relaxed and the marketing efforts last, business wins. Then the marketing time has to be reinstated. So in each of these situations, someone has specific motivated intents at adhering to self-control and a plan. When they lapse as part of the cycle, they have to be reinstated. So usually the prompt for the return to the original is the shock of recognition, and the lapse occurs with relaxation into a comfort zone. And this is, again, why evolving a new identity that incorporates changes is so important. The mind software upgrade. The patterns that cycle quickly come into attention and can be addressed readily. Some patterns have extremely long time cycles, and recognition occurs gradually. An example would be the aging process and the recognition of the need for exercise and nutrition crystallized by an event, such as a heart attack. Every time I go to my workout place, I see people I know have been sent there by the doctor after a heart attack or after some kind of traumatic event physically, and they're beginning to work out for the first time. Now, wellness patterns can be addressed in small ways during the day. For example, your brain can be measured to function differently depending on the music you listen to. Doctors Gordon Shaw and Francis Rauscher showed that undergraduates who listened to 10 minutes of a Mozart sonata performed better on cognitive tests. The improvement was because of getting centered and relaxed and allowed access to information stored in all of mind states. So here's a potential list of prompts for wellness states of mind. A 3-minute break to listen to music to decrease stress or just relax. Make your first thoughts of the day positive and fulfilling, empowering. They set in motion how the day will transpire. Make your last thought at night before you go to sleep a positive, enhancing one. It sets in motion what your unconscious mind works on while you're asleep. A meditation period of 3 to 10 minutes a day can be powerful to get centered and determine your focus. Be aware of especially fertile times to plant seeds, such as the beginning and ending of the day. If you're positive, it will grow. If you're a collector of injustices, your collection will grow. The quickest signal of what you're thinking about is what you're feeling. Feelings let you know whether you're on track or not. So now some final thoughts on storytelling, genes, and alchemy. Story is the most powerful way humans can communicate. It's been said that the secrets of great stories are the secrets of the mind, and that unlocking these secrets awakens the power of story in us. Work with that power, James Bonnet tells us, and you can steal fire from the gods. A story can transcend language, time, and culture. Our brains are wired to need and enjoy stories. And a story has both an emotional and cognitive influence on our beliefs and decisions. Stories motivate and persuade. They appeal to our emotional capacity for empathy. Remember from our first session, I suggested, write this question down. What's my story? To think about your story, it makes you who you are. Summarize your plot in one sentence. Bullet your major storylines, not your bio, your title, your role, but your story. Review the answers now that you wrote then, and see where you are after just 12 seminars. Now, add this question. What is my wellness story? Melanie Green, professor at UNC Chapel Hill, found that people who perform better on tests of empathy become more easily transported by a story. This empathic ability to put ourselves in another person's shoes means that we can discern intent, motivation, awareness, and mental states of others. Children develop mentalization, the theory of mind, and the ability to think about thought at around age 5. Once we develop a theory of mind, we can imagine minds in others and make stories of things. This means that we attribute intentions and motivations to people and to things in the world around us. So stories are a vital tool for learning as well as developing relationships. We keep tabs on people, understand them, and spread information by storytelling. A story makes a comprehensive and complete narrative for both mind and brain. The desire to create a completeness and closure by both mind and brain is embraced in a story. We practice social skills and promote social cohesion by stories. In fact, a study by Jonathan Gottschall at Washington Jefferson College found that stories of people around the world possess a universal theme that reflect common underlying biology. The power of stories is emphasized by finding that people more readily accept ideas when their minds are in a story mode versus an analytical mindset. Now, we've talked about the wellness story from perspectives of cells, mind, brain, and story. Now, final word about genes. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change the ways genes operate. Our experiences program how active our genes will be. There's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Of our more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only at a certain organ of the body, and some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, including our behavior, are reliant on each other, interdependent. What we do as well as what we eat will turn genes on or turn them off. Genes cannot operate independently of their environment, internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, and our social interactions all interact to turn genes on and off. Let me give you a really simple example. You eat broccoli. Broccoli contains a form of B6, which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among other things, stabilizes mood. So too can current meaningful interactions. Small, caring, nurturing acts have a powerful and lasting impact, even in adulthood. As alchemists, we help people see possibility to engage in a transformative process. Probably the most common way we're short-sighted in our decision-making is that we may choose a small amount of something right now rather than a larger amount in the future. At any point, we are only one choice away from changing our lives. So, finally, in conclusion, your true story. The residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. You can begin to align your relationship with everything from your money to yourself by authentic conversation, internally and externally. Wealth, happiness, joy, scarcity, fear, worry, confidence, all mindsets. Write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Write the truest story possible. One final very brief story. A small boy walked up to Walt Disney and asked him how he could be like him when he grew up? Disney took this question very seriously, and he thought about it for a moment. He held up his finger to let the little boy know he's thinking about it, not give up on him, because he wanted to really give him a thoughtful response. And finally, Disney said four words. Think, believe, dream, dare.